friend, love uncle. We welcome, you know, all the Katz family here. You just have to rub it in our faces that you're Cohen said that. We get it. For all those Kohanim that are not Katzes. But Uri Katz, and the Shamash Avin Aliyah, his memory should be a blessing. Before I introduce Rabbi Leibowitz, I also just want to bring something up that was sent to me by another fellow Cohen. That was Alan Esther, just yesterday, sent me the following. Because as I alluded to in the flyer when Rabbi Klinger and I kind of put the flyer together, you know, we said that the shiur also was inspired by many Kohanim, all the Kohanim throughout the community. We've been talking about this for collective week. I remember Richie also worked on it initially, right? It finally happened. So last year, Barry Karen, he's right there, I saw him a few times today, not that one. And he wrote as follows, October 4th, 2022. Shalom Chaverim. For years we have spoken about having a class centered around our Kohanic duties. I'm not sure what the grammar there, but alas, it has yet to happen. I came across the attached in a book of discourses by our Soloveitchik called On Repentance. Given the season and the number of times we'll be acting as conduits for Hashem's blessings to our communities over the next few days and weeks, I thought it worthwhile to send out. Beautiful. Wishing you all an easy and meaningful fast and a household full of love, Barry. Responds none other than Howard Aubrey, who said to the Chevra of Kohanim, says Howard, who had just had his surgery, right before Rosh Hashanah. Thanks for sending this, and I totally agree that a class on Birkat Kohanim would be beneficial to us all. Many of us have diverse minhagim, and hopefully we can have our first class soon. Gemar Chatima, Tova, it should be a good year for us all, Howard. As we know, we remembered Howard this morning here in the shul, and the class is happening as he had wanted. I read that. I was at the Shiva house with the boys after Mincha Marv. I read that to them and told them I was coming here for Rabbi Leibowitz's shiur on Kohanim. And this stuff doesn't just happen. There's a neshama. There's a holiness to that neshama. And Hashem in the world that guides all of the things that happen to us. And I want to thank everyone that put their efforts in to making this happen. And we will also dedicate this year to the Ilui Nishmas Tzvi Michael Ben Raphael HaKohen. We are privileged to have with us the first time. I'm sorry. There's going to be more. Rabbi Ari Leibowitz. Rabbi Leibowitz and I went to MTA together. And clearly he did much better than I did in school. He is, Rabbi Leibowitz is the director of Smicha at the Rabbi Isaac Belchanan Theological Seminary, as well as the Morda Asra of Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere, previously taught at Landis College for Men, and an 11th grade Rebbe at DRS. Represent, there we go, right there, in the family.
My son-in-law.
Rabbi Leibowitz grew up in the Five Towns and studied at Yeshiva Karim B'Yavne, and developed a close relation with the Rav Aaron Silver, taught him his Derech HaLimud, and encouraged him to pursue a career in Clay Kodesh. And upon returning from Eretz Yisrael, YU, Sai Sims, and now we know of Rabbi Leibowitz from his fame, of his halacha, bites that are all over YU Torah, his hundreds, like probably at this point thousands of shiurim all over YU Torah, and really just the incredible cutting edge and practical and relevant insights into halacha that Rabbi Leibowitz brings to the table. It is an absolute honor and a pleasure that Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Rabbi Morgenstern, Vershustamar, Da'asra. It is so wonderful to be with you tonight, and so wonderful to be here in Scarsdale for the first time. I've heard so much about the great work that Rabbi Morgenstern, my old friend for many, many decades already, has been doing here, and how lovely this community is. and I've been to many of the neighboring communities, and it's wonderful to finally be here with you. I have to say I'm extremely moved by what I just heard in terms of how this shiur is happening dafka on this night after the person who requested it is enjoying it from Shemayim, and it should be an aliyas neshama to him, and it should be an aliyas neshama to Uri Katz, zichrono levracha, and the Katz family. It's to their credit that that this year is happening. Now, it is somewhat unusual for this time of year, meaning I've been fortunate enough to be able to share Torah in a number of different places over the past couple of weeks, and everyone has always wanted the same thing. They wanted tshuva, inspiration, something nice to light a fire under me, and here we have like this very technical halachic topic, and I'm very moved by that, because that's what makes my heart sing, you know, like a technical halacha. For many other people, it's like, oh, that's dry, and that is, like, to me, that's like the most exciting thing in the world. You know, that's like what gets me going in the morning. So it's extremely exciting for me to be here sharing some Torah and some halacha relating to this very important topic of Birchas Kohanim, which the timing couldn't be better, because here in Chutz La'aretz, unless you're Sephardic, the season that we do more Birchas Kohanim than any other season is right now, during this time period. Before we get into the halacha, I just want to say one little piece of machshava or hashkafa relating to Birchas Kohanim. I remember many years ago, I was at my aunt and uncle's house in Rehovot. My aunt already passed away, my aunt Allah Shalom, my aunt Joanne, and I noticed on the shelf in their house, they had a sefer called... what's the name of the Sefer? I've got already the name of the Sefer, but it was written by the author of Torah Tamima, and it was a Sefer on Chumash. Do you remember? Yeah, Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, but he has a Sefer on Chumash, not Torah Tamima. Another Sefer of just Vorts on Chumash, of little Divrei Torah on Chumash. I don't remember the name of the Sefer, but I just pulled it off the shelf randomly, and I opened up to a random page, figuring, let's just see what's here. And I came across the most beautiful Vort relating to Birchas Kohanim. And he points out that there's an unusual phrasing in the Birchas Kohanim. We bless the Kohanim, bless the people. I shouldn't say we, I'm not a Kohen. The Kohanim bless the people, that we should have yaseim lecha shalom, that we should have shalom, we should have a sense of peace in Klal Yisrael, among the Jewish people. And he said, it's just unusual that we say v'yaseim lecha shalom. V'yaseim means, and we should be placed upon you. I don't know, you should have peace. You should experience peace. You should be peaceful toward each other. Of course, in our Shmona Esrei, we also use a similar expression of Sim Shalom. What is this lashon of v'yaseim Sim? Where does this come from? So what he suggests as follows, he puts together a few different gemaras, a few different marmakomos, but it's based on the following idea. He says, you know, shalom is not all that elusive. Peace is not all that elusive. It just normally comes in one of two ways. One way that peace comes very often is when we have a common enemy. That if two people have a common enemy, then even if they don't have that much in common, and even if maybe they wouldn't get along with each other normally, but in their joint battle against their common enemy, they find similar values, and they find room to get along with each other. Another place that shalom often comes from is that we're nowhere near the people that we have to get along with. It's very easy to get along with people that you don't have to put up with all the time. Meaning, as long as I love all of the Jews in Israel, because I live in America. So I'm praying for them, I want their welfare and their safety. The Jew that cut me off or that double parked and took my, you know, that Jew I don't have so much patience for. But the one, are there no Israeli Jews that are also double parking and that are also cutting people off? If you've ever driven in Israel, yes. Yes, there are. But as long as, you know, I'm far away, then I feel a sense of shalom. So the Torah Tamima quotes a Gemara that says, when in relation to the placement of the ashes next to the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, that the Lashon of Sima, of placing, is used by the ashes to tell me, the Gemara says, that when you place the ashes, it has to be benachas and shelo bepizur. What does that mean? It has to be placed gently and also not scattered, where it's gathered together. So says the Taras Ima, wait, if the word viasem or sim, when it comes to the ashes, means that it should be placed binachas, in a gentle manner, and shalom bepizor, when they're not scattered, maybe that's what it means when we bless viasem lecha shalom, that the shalom that we hope for should be, even if things are binachas, and we don't have any common enemies, and there's no anti-Semitism, and there's no one attacking us, and we still get along with each other, and even when we are shalom bepizur, when we're not scattered all over the place, when we're very close together, when we're in close proximity to each other, that there should still be shalom, and that's the highest level of shalom, when you don't have the two normal factors that lead to shalom, and you still have shalom, even if there's no enemy, and even if you're not scattered all over the place, even if we're not scattered at different ends of the world, that we still feel a sense of shalom. I remember I was once on a Pesach program, and I guess it's an old line, but it was the first time I had heard it. Someone said to me at the end of Pesach, someone said, you know, after spending 8 days together with my entire family, I realize that I really, really love my family. I don't like them at all, but I love them very, very much. And sometimes people get that sense that when things are too close, when everyone's very close, it's harder to feel that sense of shalom. So the ultimate bracha that we have with Nesias Kapayim, with Birchas Kohanim, and that perhaps we should all have in mind, is that we're living in a time, every time, but really particularly now, where the Jewish people need a little more shalom. In Eretz Yisrael in particular, we need a lot more shalom, and it's something that we should have in mind as we're receiving this wonderful bracha, that the shalom should come even when there's no common enemy, and even when we're very, in very close proximity to each other, and no matter what the circumstances, to recognize the greatness in each other and to be able to see the goodness in each other as well, and to feel that sense of shalom. Now, having said that, as an introduction, there were, and I asked Rabbi Morgenstern, are there any questions that you want me to address? Meaning, Birchas Kohanim is a very big sugya. It is one siman in Shulchan Aruch, but it's like one of the longest simanim in all of Shulchan Aruch. If you open up a Mishnah Berurah, Siman Kuf Chav Ches, the very first siman in the second volume of Mishnah Berurah, it's ginormous. In fact, this past summer I was in Camp Keli, and I have a group of young men that I learn with. They learn all day there. It's a bunch of 18, 19-year-old young men, and they're learning three siddurim a day, morning to night, and we learned Birchas Kohanim for a full month. We learned, I assume that's why you were reaching out to me. Because I was in Camp Keli, and I get a text from Rabbi Morgenstern, well, you want to come to the community and give a shiur on Birchas Kohanim? I'm like, oh, I guess he's listening. Oh, you know, okay. I guess he's following the Birchas Kohanim shiur. I was like, there's so much to say. So Morgenstern was kind enough to collect, I assume submitted by people, or did you make up the question? I don't know. I know that when Rav Schachter came to my community, I gave everyone the opportunity to submit the questions for the Q&A, and then I wrote all the questions. You know, so I don't know if that's what happened over here, but if whether they were submitted or whether they were written by you, whatever it was, maybe we'll just go through them one by one. Some of them will be quicker answers, some of them a little bit slower, but one of the things that maybe I won't even go in order that they're submitted, but in order of, I don't know, random order. Someone had submitted a question where they asked, and I think this is important to know, it's important to realize, someone had asked if there is a problem. They've noticed that in certain places, the kihila, or certain members of the congregation, turn away from the Kohanim. You see, we've all been frightened by a particular Maimar Chazal that many of us heard first when we were young children. And that is that if one looks at the hands of the Kohanim during Birchas Kohanim, anyone know how it ends? Oh, you'll be blind, right? So you become no one wants to be blind. What a terrible thing. So we do whatever we can not to look at the hands of the Kohanim. So there are some people that you'll notice will actually turn their back on the Kohanim, will turn their back away from the Kohanim during Birchas Kohanim. Many others, most others, will cover their eyes or will avert their gaze, will look downward. Men will often put a talis over their head, and if they have children, they'll gather their children under the talis. By the way, if you're wondering, whether the Arizona desert is the hottest place on earth, it isn't. Death Valley is not hottest. The hottest place on earth is under Daddy's talis during Birchas Kohanim. That is like, you can't breathe. It's thick air, but that's where. But still, you know, it's when you think back, to that experience as a child, it still brings up warm feelings in a good way. And we have this practice. The question is it really? Is it really necessary? So not only is it not necessary to turn away from Kohanim, but the opposite might in fact be true. Not might. The opposite is in fact true. Meaning the halacha is, and it's explicit in the Gemara, it's interesting, the sugyas of Birchas Kohanim all appear in Maseches Sota. Because Maseches Sota, what is it doing in Maseches Sota? Maseches Sota is a Masechta that has a perek of Elu Ne'amarim B'Kol Lashon, that certain things you're allowed to say in any language, and other things you're allowed to say only in Lashon HaKodesh, only in the original Hebrew. So since on that list, Birchas Kohanim is one of the items on the list, all of the sugyas of Birchas Kohanim happen to appear in Maseches Sota. Birchas Kohanim has nothing to do with a Sota, which is an entirely different section of the Torah. If I were, when they put me in charge of Judaism, I'm going to, take Birchas Kohanim and I'm going to put it in Maseches Megillah. It makes much more sense to put in Maseches Megillah, because there's a similar Mishnah Megillah. It doesn't talk about what could be written, what could be said in any language, but it talks about mitzvos that are done during the day can be done all day, that any time during the daylight hours, those mitzvahs can be done. And on that list is Birchas Kohanim. So Maseches Megillah, which talks about Kriyas HaTorah, and talks a lot about Tefillah, and talks about Megillah, that's where I would have included Birchas Kohanim, and that's earlier in Shas than Maseches Sota. I don't know why it happens to come up in Maseches Sota, but that's where all the sugyas are. And the Gemara is pretty explicit that you're not allowed to turn away from the Kohanim. You're not allowed to turn your back to the Kohanim during Birchas Kohanim, and think about it. It's a basic derech eretz. If someone is blessing you, it's not polite, it's not proper to turn away from somebody who's blessing you. You want to receive the blessing, and you want to show that you're eager to receive the blessing. So it's proper, especially in light of the fact that there is an opinion of the Sefer Charedim, one of the great Rishonim, who writes, Mitzvah levarich kohen es Yisrael, v'Yisrael ha'omdim panim keneged pnei kohanim bishtika, when a Yisrael is standing face to face with the Kohanim silently, umechavnim libam lekabel berchasam kedvar Hashem, and has in mind to receive the bracha as God commanded, heim nami bechlal hamitzvah. They're also included in the mitzvah. So in case there are other people like me over here who are not Kohanim, and you're thinking, well, is this shir really for me? According to the Sefer Charedim, absolutely this shir is really for you. Because according to the Sefer Charedim, just like the Kohanim have a mitzvah to be mivarech the Jewish people, we have a mitzvah to be misbarech, to receive the bracha, to show up for the bracha. I'll tell you, there are gedolei Torah that when they come from Eretz Yisrael, many Torah giants, when they come to visit America, will only daven in Sephardic minyanim. Ashkenazi Torah giants that will only daven at a Sephardic shul, because they're going to give up the chance of Birchas Kohanim. So you'll struggle with the words a little bit, and you'll not know what's going on. Sometimes when an Ashkenazi davens in a Sephardi shul, it's a little confusing. I would imagine it would be true the other way around also. I remember my grandfather, Zichrono Levracha, my grandfather just passed away this year. It was my great hero in life. So when he was in his 90s already, my family and I were in Yerushalayim for Shabbos, and we convinced him, he lived in Rehovot, we convinced him to spend Shabbos with us in Yerushalayim, even though it wasn't easy for him to move around so much, but he wanted to spend Shabbos with us. So and it was the most beautiful Shabbos to spend together with my grandfather, Zichrono Levracha, in Yerushalayim. But I didn't want him to have to walk to shul. So in the building where we were renting an apartment, there was a minyan, a Sephardi minyan, on the ground floor of the building. So on Friday night, we davened at the Sephardic minyan. And afterwards, when we went up to have our Shabbos meal, my grandfather said, "Do you think it would be possible for us to daven at an Ashkenazi shul tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah, sure, no problems. I just didn't want you to have to schlep. I didn't want you to have to walk." He said, and as my grandfather was the sweetest, he said, "I love Sephardi people. I love them so much. I didn't know whether to dance or to sing or to stand or to sit. I was just totally lost. I had no idea what to do at any point. But one thing we know that Sfardim do in Chutz La'aretz is that they do Birchas Kohanim each and every day. So there are many Gedolei Torah, when they come to America, will want to receive that bracha. They'll want to be the recipients of that bracha. There are other Gedolei Torah that live in America that once a week they'll sneak into a Sfardi minyan just to receive that bracha. People I know that do that all the time, just to be recipients of that bracha. So it's very worthwhile, and if you turn away, you're showing that you're not interested in the bracha. What about looking at the Kohanim? Are you allowed to look at the Kohanim? So I have a Rebbe, my great Rebbe, Moreno Agon Rav Shechter Shlita, the Rosh Kol in Yeshiva University. I've been with him while Birchas Kohanim was going on, and I look at him, and he's looking right at the Kohanim. Mm-hmm. I want to go over to him and say, like, Rebbe, you're going to go blind. Like, you can't do that. Like that, you know, you're not supposed to be doing that. So he explained to me that the practice of not looking at the Kohanim is, there's no issue to look at the Kohanim. You're not allowed to look at the hands of the Kohanim when the hands of the Kohanim are the conduits through which the Shechina comes to bless the Jewish people. That's also an important point that maybe we should come back to. It is not the Kohen who is blessing the Jewish people. The Kohen is serving as the conduit for God's blessing of the Jewish people. Some people, when they hear that, Kohanim, when they hear that, feel like, oh, that's all I am? Others say, no, that's even better, meaning it could be my bracha, or I could be the conduit of God's bracha. And that's a much greater thing. And that's why, by the way, if you have a Kohen who does all sorts of averos, things that are against the Torah, he still does Birchas Kohanim. If it's something against his kahuna, he doesn't do Birchas Kohanim. But if he does averos, things that are against the Torah, there are 365 things you're not allowed to do in the Torah. If you have a Kohen who, let's say, the example given, the Rambam gives, is he violates Giloy Arayos. I'm not going to translate everything, but he violates some pretty serious Isurim. He's still allowed to do Birchas Kohanim. But that's terrible. He's a terrible person. How can he do Birchas? Because it's not his bracha. He's the conduit through which Hashem sends the bracha. So as long as he honors his kahuna and he doesn't violate some avera that shows disrespect to his very kahuna, the bracha can work through the kohen. The bracha works through the conduit that is the kohen. But that shechina rests on the hands of the kohanim, and it used to be the practice that kohanim would stick their hands out of the talis. And the reason for that practice was that to not entice the kohanim to look at their own hands, so they'd be under the talis and their hands would be outside of the talis, so that they wouldn't look, because they're also not allowed to look at their hands. But nowadays, the much more common practice is that Kohanim cover their hands with the talis. So when you look at the Kohanim, you're not looking at their hands. And Rav Shechter said, it's derech eretz. Someone's giving you a bracha, you look at the person that's giving you a bracha. So I'm looking at them. And there's no problem with looking at them when their hands are covered with the talis. I've done that a few times. Once I did it, and there was a Kohen with his hands outside the talis. So my eyesight's going a little bit, but the one time there was a Kohen. I don't think that's a common practice. I don't think that's what you're supposed to do, but that's what that particular... Try to tell a Kohen that he should do differently than he's doing. It doesn't work. These are traditions in families. These are things that people grew up with. It doesn't... I've tried once or twice to tell somebody, the way you're holding your arms, it's a little too low. You got to raise your arm. This is the way my father held his arms. It's the way my grandfather held his arms. So you can't always...
Tell his wife,
yeah. It's funny, I once went to visit, I was in Passaic, New Jersey once, in Rav Yonason Sachs's shul. And he was giving me a tour of his shul. And it was, I guess it was fairly newly built. And the women's section is in a balcony in the back with a one-way glass. So the women have a really great view of like everything, much better than any view on the floor level, because from a bird's eye view you can see everything. And he said that it was a great idea, the one-way glass, and the women were very happy with the mechitza. He said the problem is that now he gets phone calls all the time. A woman calls him up and says, "Can you tell my husband to stop talking during Kaddish? I see him schmoozing the whole time with his friends, he said that was the only downside. So you're right. Maybe if you tell the wife, you'll get somewhere. So anyway, so as far as the question of what you should be doing, you certainly should not be turning away. That's clearly against the halacha. It could be you're even allowed to look. The more common prevalent practice is that you go under a talis, or you avert your eyes down toward the machzor and don't look directly, but you're supposed to be facing the Kohanim, so much so that the amsha achorei ha-Kohanim, the Gemara talks about the people who are behind the Kohanim are not included in the bracha. So in many shuls, for example, you have rows of seats that go all the way to the front wall, and the Kohanim, let's say, are standing here, and there are people that are sitting there, so they're not supposed to stay there when the Kohanim are giving their bracha. They're supposed to go in front of the Kohanim in order to receive the bracha. So that's as far as that question is concerned. We're not going to get to all the... What's my time limit, by the way? Where are the sponsors? What's the time limit? What time should I do this? What do you think? Okay, so... You'll tell me, you give me a... Okay, so the... another question that was... And by the way, if anyone has any questions that they'd like to submit now on the floor... Yeah?
Just a quick question. If there were 10 Kohanim that made up the minyan...
Yeah.
And there's nobody for us to be Mavarech too...
Yeah. So the Gemara actually talks about that question explicitly. When would that ever come up? Family reunion or something like that, right? When there's a family of Kohanim that gets together. So the Gemara says that if there are 10, then they're all Mevarech. They all do the Birkas Kohanim. But who? Lemi Mevarechim. Who are they giving the bracha to? La'am Shebesados. The assumption is that the bracha works for anyone in that city. And in fact, I think it was maybe the Chida, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, wrote a letter to his family that now that I'm in Eretz Yisrael, there's Birchas Kohanim every day, and I'm having in mind that the bracha should go for all of you back home. Now, it's not so clear that that works. Am Shebesados likely means the people in that community who, for whatever reason, weren't able to make it to shul. It's also not so clear that the Am Shebesados is receiving the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim. They're not in fulfillment of the commandment to receive the bracha, but they are receiving some element of the bracha itself, some of the blessing. Yeah.
What happens if there's no Levi'im to do the washing?
So there's no Levi'im, so anyone know the halacha? If there's no Levi'im, so then we look for a Bechor. Firstborns would do the washing of the hands. And that is obviously a much more common case. It's funny, what happens if there's no Levi in Shul and it's Kriyas HaTorah day? So what do? The Kohen gets two aliyahs. He gets a second aliyah. You know who's shocked whenever I share that halacha? A Levi. They're always like, what do you do when we're not there? Because like, they've never seen it. They've never been there when there hasn't been a Levi there because they're Levian. So they're like, what is going on when we're not there? There's like two. They can't even imagine that such a thing happens. But for those of us who are not Levian, we see that all the time because Levian are not so common. Yeah.
Two things. First of all, is it possible to say for his name Barak Shamar?
So Baruch Sha'amar is right. He has a couple of Svarim Baruch Sha'amar on Tefillah, as Rabbi Morgenson pointed out. And I think he's got one in Pirkei Avos, also called Baruch Sha'amar. He has a sefer called Makar Baruch, which is a four-volume autobiography. And from that sefer, Makar Baruch, the art scroll, a number of years ago, published an abridged version of it called My Uncle the Netziv. Because Tzartzimim was a nephew of the Netziv, so they took out the parts about the Netziv, translated it, and published a short biography called My Uncle the Netziv, and they sent it out as like a fundraiser on behalf of a Lakewood cheder or something. And then 2 weeks later, they sent out, please send back the copies of My Uncle the Netziv. It's contraband. You're not allowed to have it. So then everyone knew to hold on to it tight, because once a book is banned, then you know that's a book you want to have. No one was going to read it otherwise. It was like a tzedakah mailing. You know, no one was going to. But as soon as they heard it was banned, why? What's banned? You know, what's good in here? What's that?
I have a real question also.
Oh, okay.
is there a basis for different customs for the Kohanim? I was talking to my father. He never left his seat until, like, Ritzeh was called out. But I see other Kohanim in our shul, they will, I don't know if they're eager to get a particular spot on the bima or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say what.
So there's a little push and pull over here. Okay. Because on the one hand, the Kohen has to be, the Gemara says, the Kohen has to be Oker Raglav by Ritzeh. And if he's not Oker Raglav, meaning Oker Raglav means he has to be on the move. He has to be going toward the direction of duchening by Ritzeh. And if he doesn't, then he can't duchen. he can't do the bris. So he's got to be on the move by then. On the other hand, we don't want to create too much of a hefsek between when he washes his hands, too much of an interruption between when he washes his hands and when he actually does birch kladim. So some kladim, and maybe this is the practice in your family, like right after, say, they'll go on the move. Others, as soon as kiddush is over, will immediately go wash their hands, maybe to jockey for position. There is a machlokas. It's true. I mean, this is the way it is. There is a machlokas. By the way, the word duchaning, where does that come from? So the duchan is the platform. They're omed al haduchan. So it's the platform that's set up in front of the shul. In many shuls, they don't have a platform, certainly in shtibles and things like that. In, you know, I imagine in this shul, in the main sanctuary, there's a nice platform. But that's what the duchan is, that you're omed al haduchan. There is a machlokas, what it means to be oker raglav. Does it mean that you have to be headed already up to the duchan? Or that you're even headed back to the washing station, as long as you're on the way, on the path that ultimately is going to get you there. So that's a machlokas. So some might be makbid to already be on the way up. Once had a shaila where a kohen was, there was a minyan with no kohen. I think it was in the Young Israel Woodmere. And they have, the Young Israel Woodmere is a very large shul.
So the Ritzay is not so much of a queue, but it's like the latest time.
Right. So there was, in the Young Israel, there was something like 10 minyanim that go on simultaneously, and one of the minyanim didn't have a kohen. So someone realized in the middle of Chazar Shas, they went to grab a kohen from another minyan. So he had been oker ragla from that other minyan by Ritzay, but he hadn't even been in the room where this Birchas Kohanim was going to happen by Ritzay. So they weren't sure what to do, whether that counts or not. So Rabbi Shai Shechter, after Yantif, called his father, Rabbi Shai Shechter Shlita, and he said, oh yeah, to Magen Avraham, like, I mean, sometimes he just astonishes with the memory of details. He said, yeah, it's a machlokes between Magen Avraham and whatever. Like, immediately he knew whether, you know, how to resolve. I don't remember even what he said, but he remembered, he knew immediately how to resolve that issue. Now, one thing you may notice about Birch Kohanim, and one of the questions that was submitted, unless someone wants
to...
Okay, then we'll leave over. So one of the questions that was submitted was why there's no singing on Shabbos, meaning during the week when we have a Yom Tov that falls out during the week. So the Kohanim sing this whole niggun. In the minhag in some shuls is to sing one niggun, in other shuls is another niggun, in other shuls is to fight about which niggun to sing. But there are a couple of I asked Cantor Beer, who is head of our cantorial school in Yeshiva University, which one is more authentic. Because I once heard Kohanim arguing about which niggun to use, and one of them said, the one that I use was sung in the Beis HaMikdash. And the other one said, you can't possibly know that. He said, what do you mean? I do know that. My father told me, and his father told him, and his father told him. And I'm confident that... So Cantor Beer says that they're both legitimate, that they both have old roots, and you know. So there are a couple of popular nigunim, but we don't have this elongated nigun when it comes to Shabbos. So it seems that what that's based on is the fact that we don't say those extra paragraphs in between the three sections on Shabbos. Why do we not say those extra paragraphs? So there is a discussion. The Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Shabbos that you're not supposed to be mevakesh tzrachav on Shabbos, that one is not supposed to put in personal requests in their tefillah on Shabbos. And those paragraphs are personal requests. So we skip them on Shabbos. Now, it's fascinating because it's not so clear that you're allowed to do personal requests on Yantif. That's a machlokas also. That's a dispute as well. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Yantif, in Siman Tav Kuf Ayin Vav, ubekal makom ein mis'anin velo zoakim velo matriyim b'Shabbos v'Yom Tov al shum tzara. That you don't cry out, you don't fast, you don't do any of these kinds of things where you're pleading with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something personal on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And it sounds like you're not supposed to do it even on Yom Tov. However, the Magen Avraham writes in Hilchos Birchas Kohanim that the reason he writes even that there used to be a practice that they didn't do Birchas Kohanim on Shabbos at all, that they would just skip Birchas Kohanim on Shabbos. And the reason they would skip Birchas Kohanim is because people were in the habit that when they're doing Birchas Kohanim, that they say those tefillos. So in order to prevent people from saying those tefillos, they skip the Birchas Kohanim entirely on Shabbos. So that's incorrect. We reject that. We still Birchas Kohanim is a mitzvah d'oraisa. We want to grab onto that. We don't want to forego the mitzvah d'oraisa because of a potential rabbinic violation of asking for something personal on Shabbos. But we at least skip that part on Shabbos. You know, there are some people when they bench after their meal on Shabbos that they stop at Al Yichasreinu and they don't say all the harachamans.
They're just lazy.
So why don't they say all the that's me. Why don't they say all the harachamans? Because you're not supposed to ask for personal needs on Shabbos. The joke in my family was that my kids say, they're in the gym working out, and someone walks by and says, "How much do you bench?" And they say, "Just till Al Yichasreinu." But that's a din on Shabbos, and we're not supposed to be mivakid shlachim. I actually received an email from another rav just yesterday, asking that the first three harachmans aren't really bakashas shlachim. So you should be able to say the first three harachmans. I noticed my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, when he benches, first of all, he benches very slowly. So you always get the impression he must be saying benching twice, you know. But really, he's saying a shorter benching than the rest of us. It just takes him longer to finish it. But I noticed that when he gets to Ali Chasreinu, he'll maybe say a harachman or two or three, but not the ones that are bakashas shrachim. He'll say bamaro milamdu, and that'll be it. And then he'll finish benching, because those are not asking for personal requests. I always told my kids growing up, when they thought like, because Rav Shechter only stops at Ali Chasreinu, we can also. I always said, only if you finish at the same time that everybody else finishes. Meaning, say the words. Sometimes, by the way, it's a good Kabbalah for the new year. There are certain things that are almost universal that shuls say them too fast. There are certain things. I'm not making any accusations in this shul. I know what happens in my shul and every other shul I've ever been to that I've davened at. Brich Shemei, when they take out the Torah. There's no way you can say all those Aramaic words in the amount of time allotted. Baruch Hashem li'olam amen v'amen at Mariv, in between Ashkivenu and Shemona Esrei. There's not a man on earth or woman on earth that is able to say the words as quickly as the amount of time that long tachnun on Monday and Thursday, right? There are certain things, there's just no way. When it comes to long tachnun, my Rebbe says one third of it each time. I say two thirds because I don't daven as slowly as him. I'm better at reading Hebrew, apparently. No, I'm just joking. but to say some section of the long tachnun, and I would put in that category the third of the paragraphs that we have in Birchas Kohanim in between. The Kohanim are singing, and we're singing this whole long Yihi Ratzon, and especially if you have to figure out which family members you have. Wait, I still have the Aim and Banai Ubunosai, and you're trying to fit in everybody. Wait, is it my grandchild there? No grandchildren in that tefillah, right? And you're just trying to figure it all out, and it's very hard to finish that tefillah in time. It might be a good idea for a person to say, you know what, Yetzer Hara, I'm going to give you one. I'm going to stop saying Baruch Hashem Li'olam Amen V'Amen at Mariv, and I'm just going to say Hashkivenu really slowly, and actually, focus. Or I'm going to stop saying the Harachamans, on Shabbos, but I'm just going to say the first four brachas of benching, really slowly and with real focus and with real concentration. You know, there's an expression: Tov Ma'at B'Kavana, Meharbe Shalom B'Kavana. Better to do a little bit with kavana than a lot without kavana. Slichos, it's a really good idea. If you can't make it through the entire paragraph because you're breaking your teeth and they're unfamiliar words, say the first few stanzas of the unless you're leading the tzibur, then you have to. But say the first few stanzas and you'll make it through something. Ma'at bekavana. How did I get to this? What question were we discussing? The Yihi Ratzon.
No singing on Shabbos.
Oh, no singing on Shabbos. Right. So that's where it came from, not to sing on Shabbos, because you don't have those tefillos. Now, if a person actually had a bad dream on Friday night, then you're allowed to say the tefillah for the dream on Shabbos. Because even though you're not supposed to ask for personal needs on Shabbos, you're also not supposed to fast on Shabbos, but the Gemara says that if you had a bad dream, you're allowed to do a tainis chalom afilu b'Shabbos. That even on Shabbos, it used to be a thing that people would do when they had a bad dream. They would fast as a way of rectifying the bad dream. It's not the common practice nowadays. Nowadays, when we have a bad dream, we just try to forget about it. But it used to be, why the difference? Meaning, halacha doesn't normally change like that. So why the difference? So I think the way the poskim explained it is that it used to be a person would like pretty much die within 3 miles of where they were born. They weren't exposed to that much. They didn't see that. They didn't travel much. They didn't see that much. They didn't see that. So if you had something crazy that appeared to you in a dream, it might have been a message from God. If you have something crazy that appears to you in a dream now, you're probably playing too many video games, or you know, like you've seen, or you've listened to the news, or I don't know, you've just been exposed to so much. So there are a lot of things that creep into our mind. So we always say, you know what? It's probably nothing. It's probably just something that has crept into our mind, and we should put it out of our mind. But technically speaking, if a person has a bad dream, they're allowed to say that that tefillah on Shabbos. We don't do it because we typically don't know that we had a meaningfully bad dream on that Friday night. There is even a minhag of the Arizal, a minhag al pi Kabbalah, that they don't repeat the paragraph twice. That they say the paragraph once and they break it up. Right? After the first pasuk of Birkas Kohanim, they say the first third of the paragraph. After the second pasuk of Birkas Kohanim, the second third of the paragraph. After the third pasuk of Birkas Kohanim, the third of the paragraph. And they don't even say the longer paragraph of the Yehi Ratzon. Meaning a person shouldn't feel cheated if they don't get to say the whole Yehi Ratzon. It's a much later addition, that Yehi Ratzon. That's not from the Gemara, and many communities have practiced not to say it at all. I realize that the words are somewhat meaningful. So you do have an option if you want to say it, if it's very meaningful to you. Here's what I would suggest. Again, you should ask, I should have said at the very beginning, all of these questions should really be geared to your rabbi. He is a wonderful rabbi, and you should certainly... I'm just putting out different thoughts and ideas. Rabbi Morgenstern is more than capable of advising you in terms of which way to go. But yeah, I would suggest two options. One possible option, if you don't have time to say the whole Yehi Ratzon, and you find that to be a meaningful tefillah, because you're saying v'sarich yomei avi v'imi, that I want my parents to have arichos yamim, and I want to live a long life, and I want my children to live a long life. Like, that's very meaningful for people. A lot of parts of tefillah don't feel quite as meaningful to us. Like, I don't know, when I'm davening that the hashiva shofteinu kevarishona, that the judges of yesteryear should return, like, it doesn't mean the same thing to me as v'sarich yomei avi. So it talks to us sometimes. I'm not minimizing Shemoneh Esrei during the week. You need to say those words, and you need to have kavanah in those words, and we should think of tricks to make them meaningful. I realize I'm a little jumpy tonight, but just by the way, a quick trick on making that bracha Shiva Shofteinu a meaningful, and maybe it's more meaningful to me just because of my job. I happen to be a rabbi, so I see a lot of stuff and a lot of things that I wish I didn't have to deal with. And I'm sure Rav Morgenstern can relate to this. Rav Aaron Lapiansky, one of the great Torah giants in America today, once suggested that when you say Hashiva Shoftein Kavarishona, that we should have adequate judges, that we should think about how our community is capable or incapable of handling accusations of sexual assault and starting up with children and things of that nature. And Hashiva Shoftein Kavarishona, if we only had the wisdom to know how to properly, adequately handle and punish and protect and deal with those issues in the proper way, without allowing anyone to be hurt, without allowing it's a very, very difficult thing to do, and sometimes communal leadership, with the best of intentions, can do more harm than help. And it's not a bad idea to think that Hashem should give us the wisdom to protect all members of our community to be safe and to be... So that's what I think about in Hashiva Shofteinu. Hopefully I just changed that bracha for many of you as well. So two options of what to do. We're only getting through like two questions tonight, I'm sorry. So two options of what you can do with that Yehi Ratzon. One option is you can start it at the second pasuk of it, meaning you already said the tefillah for the dreams the first time, so you don't have to say the tefillah for the dreams twice. So you could start it on the second pasuk, and then finish it on the third pasuk. So between the two of them, you might have enough time to actually finish it. Another option is start when the tzibur starts, stop when the kohanim say the word shalom, listen, answer amen, and then continue. As the Kohanim, as the Shliach Tzibur saying Sim Shalom, you can then continue and say the Hiratzon. The downside of that second option is that really you're not supposed to be doing other things during Chazaras Hashatz. You're supposed to be focused and paying attention during Chazaras Hashatz. But it may be an option. It may not be a terrible option for those who find that tefillah meaningful. But if you have to miss it, it's really not the end of the world if you have to miss that tefillah. I mean, the main part of Birchas Kohanim is actually listening to the Kohanim. Should I do one more question? More than one more? I'm following your lead. It's his fault. Okay. Someone asked, let's see. I'm Kedoshah HaKamar. Someone came over to me right before the shir and said, it says in the Siddur, when they call Kohanim, then it says in right underneath that, I'm Kedoshah HaKamar. Who's that for? Who's supposed to say, I'm Kedoshah HaKamar? I never hear anybody saying it. So who's actually, I assume the words are there for a reason, right? So who's actually supposed to say it? So the Mishnah Berurah says that the Shliach Tzibur is the one that's supposed to say it. That the Chazan is supposed to say, I'm Kedoshah HaKamar, and he writes, that which there's a practice in some places, shahakohanim omrim am kedoshecha, that the kohanim say it, says the Mishnah Berurah, ta'ushu. It's a mistake. It should not be done. In fact, the Sidur Yaivitz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, says that even more correct is that the tzibur will say it, is that the congregation should say, am kedoshecha kamor. Oh, the Kohanim, do you all say it?
Not all of you.
Not all of you. Oh, this is a point of contention.
But some of us.
Right.
So the Kohanim says Kohanim and Amkadosh HaKamor.
And Amkadosh HaKamor, meaning he's acknowledging. So Kohanim is to call them, because the halacha is that the Kohanim are only supposed to duchen when they're called to duchen. So he calls that Kohanim to call them to duchen, to call them into service. And then he declares that they are Amkadosh HaKamor. And it's considered to be unseemly. Just a moment, it's considered to be unseemly for the Kohanim to say about themselves, right? Am Kedoshecha Kamor. You know, like for them to declare. So I think that's why the Mishnah Berurah says Ta'usu. It's a mistake. But you do see that it's a lot of times when you have in learning that a sefer says and don't do this. It means because a lot of people did it. You know what I mean? Like when Tosfos gives an answer to something, Tosfos says, and don't answer that this and this, because you just have to find the Rishon that does answer, right? Because it's obvious that someone does, right? It's obvious that someone actually says it. They're not fighting against nothing. They're fighting against something that actually exists.
I think there's one time, no one says it.
Right. So then there's.
I think they don't even
say right. And then it's not even Kohanim. Right.
I had an experience, and then someone said, "You're the only Kohanim." I was like, "Yeah." He says, "No one's going to give me the cue. You have to just start."
Right. It's unusual. Yeah. It's better to have two Kohanim if you can get two Kohanim up there, because again, we'd like to do it in the proper way with all the proper words.
But
yeah.
This Rosh Hashanah, I was not here. I was in another state. I was the only Kohanim.
Yeah.
Right. So I was thinking about this question, and it said right in the commentary of the Matzer, it said if there's only one Kohen. Better minhag is to call Kohanim because you shouldn't change the Seder of.
There are three opinions.
Right, so I get up there. I actually went over to the guy. Said, I don't know what you do here. None of them call out Kohanim even if you're the only one. I get up there. Guy's not saying a word. I'm waiting. I said, okay, we're going to stand still here. So I said, I'm a guest. I went right to the bracha. As soon as I was done, the Gavai started a fight with the Chazan, and they were going.
The Jewish people are amazing, aren't the Jewish people amazing? Great, we're so feisty. We're so passionate. You know, you have to know how to be a Berditchever a little bit. You know, like the passion of your children, Rebbe Shlomo. Look how they want to serve you properly. Someone complained to me last week that there was someone who brought children to shul that were making too much noise in shul. I said, when I hear children making noise in shul, I try to think how my great-grandparents and my grandparents at certain points in their lives only would have loved to hear the sounds of children playing in shul and what they would have given for that sound. You try to be the Berditchever for a little bit. So,
one Kohen, you say Kohen.
So there are three opinions. Meaning the correct thing is follow whatever the minhag of that shul is. What's the minhag of that shul? They have no idea because they've never had it before. Right? Meaning so it's very difficult. Ideally, there should be a rabbi of the shul that makes the call and that has the guts to make a call and to say, you know, one way or the other. But Otherwise, you do what you do, and hopefully it doesn't start a fight. Apparently that didn't work. Yeah.
What is the appropriate approach to chinuch for a young non-bar mitzvah kohana?
Okay, so this is one of the questions that was submitted. At what age should children do birchas kohanim? So this is interesting because this might be, I'm questioning how involved to get. In some shuls, the youngest children go up with their fathers to duch, and they go under the father's talus, or at least to be next to their fathers so that they could see what you're supposed to do and how it works. In many places, children do not duchen at all. They don't go up at all. Anyone under bar mitzvah, they just don't go up at all. So where does that come from? And where would that friction come from? Where would those various minhagim come from? So there's a Gemara in a Mishnah, Maseches Megillah, that says, Katan kori betorah umetargim aval eino nosei eskapav, that a child should not duchen. A Mishnah. However, the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, when it talks about chinuch, and at what age you're mechanech a child for different mitzvos, the Gemara says, well, at what age should you buy a kid a lulav, or should you give him your lulav to shake? Katan hayodeya l'na'aneya, if he knows how to do the wavings of the lulav, which in my experience is about the age of 30. I don't know, most people don't know how to do it. But if he knows how to do the waving properly of the lulav, chayiv belulav. Lehis'atev, chayiv betzitzis. If he knows how to wrap himself in a talis, he's chayiv in tzitzis. Lishmar tefillin, aviv lokeach lo tefillin. If he can protect his tefillin, then his father should buy him tefillin, which is also very interesting. When do we generally put on tefillin? So this is a total anomaly in halacha. The Gemara says one thing, the Shulchan Aruch says something else, and all of Klal Yisrael does something else. Right? The Gemara says, as soon as he could protect his tefillin and respect them, which some kids, there are different personalities. Some kids can't do that till well past bar mitzvah. Other kids, at the age of 8, they're like, they're the ones that are like all put together, and every hair is in place, and imagine Rabbi Morgenstern at the age of eight, right? Right? He probably could have, he could have put on tefillin, he would have protected the tefillin properly. So that's what the Gemara says. Shulchan Aruch says the day of the bar mitzvah, not a day earlier. And what do we all do? A month before, 3 months before, different practices. They say that Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Shach always tells us, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to say that there are three halachos of three that are totally made up, that don't exist. One is the child putting on tefillin 3 months before the bar mitzvah. It doesn't exist, doesn't say that anywhere. One is, I'm trying to remember what they are.
Rav Shach, I heard Rav Shach say this. One is the Torah in the... A Torah can't be moved
unless it's used three times.
Times with that in our own or something.
Yeah, and correct, right? That Torah, they can't move a Torah to a different location unless you use it three times. And the other one is three fasts before the bar mitzvah. That it doesn't exist. The idea of three fasts before the bar mitzvah. How much before a bar or bas mitzvah is a child supposed to fast? A Yom Kippur or two. Two Yom Kippurs if they're very strong and robust and capable, and one Yom Kippur if they're not. Just a Yom Kippur, not any of the other fasts. So that's what my children did. So they were happy on the other days, not as happy on Yom Kippur. Those are three threes that don't exist. So the Gemara goes on to say, Rav Shechta I think once told us that his father got him tefillin when he was like 10. Because he was a very precocious child, and he knew that he would protect his tefillin. I don't know, but the Gemara goes on to say, "Yeah, you need a gufnaki." So when he knows lishmar tefilov to keep a gufnaki and to protect the tefillin properly and not to disrespect them, not to have bodily functions while he's wearing tefillin, things like that. But then it says hayodea lifros kapov cholkan lo truma bebeis agranos, that a kohen can collect truma that is given to kohanim when he knows how to duchen, when he knows how to be poris his kapav. What do you mean, when he knows how? I thought he's not supposed to do it until he's an adult. So how do we reconcile these gemaras? On the one hand, you have a Mishnah that tells me that a katan is not supposed to do it. On the other hand, you have a gemara that tells me, yeah, as soon as a child knows how to do it, then he can already take truma. So how do we resolve this? So Tosfos Maseches Megillah explains that we're mechanech ketanim to do birchas kohanim, but only if they're joined by an adult. Meaning, you can send up a child to duchen with his father or with other adults. The child should not be the only one duchening on his own. Shulchan Aruch paskins, katon shelo hevi shtei sa'aros, eino nosei eskapov, bifnei atzmo klal. that a child who's below the age of bar mitzvah, who's not yet physically the age of physical maturity, should not duchen alone. Aval im kohanim sheim gedolim nosei lilmod l'schanech. But together with kohanim who are gedolim, he can be nosei eskapov to learn and to be mischanech. There are communities that have a minhag not to do that. Pashut pshat in Shulchan Aruch is that a child can experience chinuch up there at the duchen together with his father. That's the pashut pshat in Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Morgenstern told me right before the shiur that that's the practice here in this shul. And that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Now, there are achronim that speak very forcefully against them that have an entirely different practice, and that's fine, meaning there could be different minhagim in Klal Yisrael. You certainly shouldn't push your own minhag if you're in a different shul. Meaning if you're, I don't know, let's say, what the Yekesha minhag is, what the Breuer's community does, but if you try to push your minhag, when you go visit, Rosh Hashanah used to tell us that you could show them a pasuk in the Torah, they'll tell you, no, our minhagim predate Matan Torah. you're not going to be able to. So the proper thing to do is to do the minhag of the community that you're in.
That with the hands,
so what's the problem?
So you have a child under a talus with you.
Oh, that he shouldn't be looking at the hands, maybe.
You're focused on your child.
So no, certainly you're right. That's meaning in that sense it's true. If the child is going to distract the father to the point that he's not going to be able to do Birkas Kohanim, that's a problem. Right, then he should think of another solution. Maybe do Birkas Kohanim. I don't know.
I guess my point is, if it's an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, that's one thing.
Right.
A two-year-old
is much harder. Right. So again, but also there are 2-year-olds and there are 2-year-olds. Meaning sometimes you have. I remember when my oldest son was 2. Rav Shechter, I was an assistant rabbi in Shari Tefillah in Lawrence. It's Shul Lawrence, and Rav Shechter was there for a Shabbos. And he said to me, "Don't you have a son?" I said, because my son wasn't there. He was 2. So I said, "Yeah, but he's 2. So Rav Shechter said, does he know how to sit quietly? I said, "Yeah, he actually, my oldest son was the one where you could just sit him down and he would just, till you tell him to move, he wouldn't move. He would just sit there quietly like that." Like he's very obedient. He's like an excellent husband. Right? So he just does as he's told. So he said if he knows how to sit quietly, you should bring him to shul. Right? I mean, you have to know your kid. If he can't, then you don't. And if he can, then you do. And if sometimes you make a trial of a Shabbos afternoon mincha instead of the 2-hour, 2.5-hour davening in the morning. If a father's distracted, then that's going to be a problem. The father shouldn't be distracted during the Birkas Kohanim. So there's a Hasidish posek from London and Manchester, the Tshuva Shraga HaMeir, who speaks very, very forcefully about not having children up there. But again, he's speaking forcefully because it's against the Pashut Pshat and Shulchan Aruch. So he has to make a big point of it to justify that practice. And he says, even though the Shulchan Aruch passes like Tosfos, I pass like Rashi, and Rashi says not that way. Okay, allow each community to have their practice. I'm following your lead, Rabbi Morgenstern. Do one more?
Take one more from the submitted, and then we'll
one more from the submitted. Okay, so let's say if I'm in the middle of the Amida, should I stop and listen to Birkas Kohanim? So Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva about this, and he says that it really depends on whether you hold that the recipients of the bracha have a mitzvah to receive the bracha. Meaning, if I have no mitzvah to receive the bracha, it's just the mitzvah of the Kohen to give the bracha, so then why should I stop in the middle of my mitzvah for the bracha to be received? But if I have a mitzvah to receive the bracha, then I should stop to be able to receive it. Now, what would you do? You would just stop and listen. Now, there is an opinion of Tosfos and Maseches Brachos, we don't paskum like, who holds that if, let's say, they're up to Kedusha and you're in the middle of Shemona Esrei, Tosfos says, you can't just stop and listen, because we have a principle called Shomea Ka'ona, that when you listen, it's as if you yourself are saying it. And you're not allowed to speak in the middle of your Shemona Esrei. So you can't be listening in the middle of Shemona Esrei. We don't pass like that. We pass when you're supposed to stop and listen to Kedusha also. But Rav Moshe writes, even according to Tosfos, for Birkas Kohanim, it's fine. because there's no mitzvah for the Yisrael to say Birchas Kohanim. The whole mitzvah is only to hear the Birchas Kohanim. So as long as he's hearing it, he's not being mafzik. There's no shomea ki'one. It's not like he's saying anything. He's just being shomea, because that's his entire mitzvah. Just to be shomea is just to listen. So the proper thing to do if you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei is to pause and listen. Now, if you're positioned behind the Kohanim, there's no sense in pausing and listening, because you're not getting the bracha anyway. You also can't move, right, in middle of Shemoneh. Rav Moshe writes, there are certain things you're allowed to move in middle of Shemoneh Esrei for. We often think of having our feet together is important. You're supposed to keep your feet together in middle of Shemoneh Esrei. There are certain circumstances where you're allowed to move, and you don't have to start Shemoneh Esrei again just because you moved. I had a shaila once. someone told me there were Yom Kippur in a shul. There was a giant chandelier right over the chazans, right over the bima, and they heard rattling. The chandelier was rattling, and they looked up and like, what? What is going on? Like, you know, is there an earthquake or something? And they saw there was a squirrel running around. It somehow snuck in through some hole in the ceiling. It was running around on the chandelier. And everyone's looking, like in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, Musaf and Yom Kippur, everyone's looking at the squirrel. And then all of a sudden, the squirrel lands on the floor in the shul and starts running around. And it's the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. So the chazan was the first one out of there. And, you know, people were trying to, like, you know, people were trying to, like, capture it with their talis, and, you know, they were trying to bait it with crackers. Why do they have crackers on your paper? No one was asking questions at this point. what's the right thing to do? You get out of shul, and then you continue Shemoneh Esrei from where you are. Meaning, if you're afraid of the squirrel, you leave, and then you continue Shemoneh Esrei from where you are. But for Birchas Kohanim, you would not be allowed to move. You wouldn't be allowed to go if you're in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, so now maybe we'll take some questions from the audience, and then we'll wrap it up. Okay.
So I'm going to ask questions, and I'll take some questions for you, Lewis. What would you say if a Kohen is the Shliach Tzibor? It's Musaf, they're the Shliach Tzibor. What do they do? How do they act? Is that something that...
So I wrote a book.
are you taking back the book?
This is the book, and it's inscribed to Rabbi Morgenstern. And if you just read through chapter, where is it? It's in this. Yeah, here it is. Chapter 26 of this book. So it's about. It's only about 12 pages long, and I go through the different opinions of what to do. We had this problem in my shul, because I mean not problem. The only person when we started a shul 18 years ago. And there were like 12 of us, you know, that started the shul. So we happened to have, like, it was a perfect group, because there was one guy who was an expert Bal Korei, and one person who was an expert Gabbai, and one person, like, there was one guy who was good at running things, an expert president. Like, it was a great thing. The only thing is, our excellent Bal Tfila, who could daven Geshem, was a Kohen. So ideally, in Chutz Laretz, you would say, okay, let someone who's not a Kohen do it. But what if he's your best Bal Tefillah? So, one second. So here, Sikum, I'll read you the last paragraph. Nesayim v'mashal, ba'ofen sherov ha'tzibur rotzim davka Kohen shliach tzibur. If they want specifically that a Kohen should be the shliach tzibur, and there are other Kohanim teduchin, right, is that what you're asking? Oh, there are other... Near a pashut sheladina mutr lekohen zel leshamish kishliach sibur ve'ein tzrichem lahakbid shashatzia dafka Yisrael. That kohen could be a shliach sibur. The shliach sibur doesn't have to be Yisrael. But there's a nechleku gedolei aposkim im adif lo levarich me'achar shabatuach lachzul tefila o adif shelo levarich. There is a machlokas aposkim whether he should duchen. The reason not to duchen is that he might get confused, and it would be difficult for him to go back to the tefillah and to finish up Chazaras HaShatz. So some say, yeah, now they're not going to get confused because there's a machzor. It used to be that it would be confusing because they're going to lose their groove and they're not going to be able to get back into it. Im hu noheg levarich, if he does bless the tzibur, tzarich lakar raglav beritzei, he has to move his feet, eritzei, because kohen that's not, like we said before, that does not okar raglav beritzei, can't duchen. There's a further dispute whether he actually goes up to the duchan. Minak rov ha'olam shalol la'alos l'duchan. That he stays where he is and just turns around. Yakor raglav ma'at. And then there's a further machlokas aposkim. Nechlukva aposkim. Acher shamakri Yisrael hikri kolbux kranim imesayim b'zeh shashatz atzmi yisayim b'sim shalom. Oshav shadav shamakri yisayim gam b'sim shalom. Once the kohen's not going to be the one calling out the words of birchas kohanim, should he finish sim shalom? So that's a further machlokas haposkim. Bottom line is, you can read all about it. There are many, many different opinions of poskim.
Do you mention whether with shoes or without shoes?
Ooh.
Take his shoes up. Like, what right. do we do, Dan? What's our minnow?
So I learned from Rabbi Rubenstein to wash before the
wash before
shots.
Shoes
on, don't do it.
Shoes on
and don't do it. And don't do it, right?
Morty, we have one of our chazanim. He comes in. I think he goes out, he washes. I asked him, I talked to him about it. He washes before Chazar Sashat. He does Duchen. And I think he does he take his shoes off?
No.
I don't remember.
No.
There is, I think, a Syrian minhag not to take shoes off b'chol, which is a very strange minhag, because that's against really, meaning for to never take shoes off is really against the halacha, but in that case, that's interesting.
Our father actually, I don't know if he was so much about Tazen, but he had Yurtzen.
Ah, okay.
So he doesn't, and someone else was the Makri. I think he may have, I don't remember if he finished it, but he never was okaragla in terms of separating his feet. He kind of had helpers. He slipped out of his shoes and jumped around, always keeping his feet together.
Right, interesting.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing as Shneur Tzibur has when they got to bow at, you know, at the Avoda and things like that.
I didn't sure when they asked me to jump and turn around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Richie. During the dance,
doesn't really work.
Except, what, correct me if I'm wrong, unless if there's one or fewer. If you're the only Kohen, then you would during the day this year, or there's only one other Kohen, you would. Hey, what is the reason why Kohanim do not do them during the day this year? And if there's a prohibition, how is that carved out as an exception when there's one or two?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. My impression is, I don't remember, but my impression is that the, first of all, it happens to be the Kohanim have a very hard time with that practice of not duchening during Avelos. So that's the time they want to duchen more than any other time, usually. Because very often they're in Avelos for a father who passed on their kahuna to them, and they, you know, they want to connect in that way. But, you know, we have to follow the rules. The idea, I think, is that the needs of the tzibur override the need of the individual. So even though, from an individual perspective, he's not going to be able to feel the proper sense of yishuv hadas, we assume, during the avelos, and of calm and serenity to be able to be mevarich in the proper frame of mind. So that's what we're nervous about. But when the tzibur needs birchas kohanim, or birchas kohanim midaraisa, so that would override. I think that's the basis. But I don't remember. I'm not sure.
No other calling, I can understand that. Again, my understanding is if there's one.
Yeah, because when there's only one, it could be that that's not the chi of Daraisa of Birchas Kohanim. So you want to upgrade the Birchas Kohanim to a Daraisa from the Drabanan. So you need to have multiple Kohanim to be Mevarich. I'm going to leave it up to you.
Yeah.
When you go out to wash, can you talk?
Ah, so that you submitted that question. So that was on the list. Oh, you did it. Okay. So, strictly speaking, yes. But first of all, you're not supposed to talk during Chazar Sashat. That's Aleph. Also, I mentioned earlier that there are some that try to wash as late as they possibly can to minimize the hefsik. So if they're talking, that's going to create another hefsek. However, like strictly speaking, there are some kohanim meaning we don't say a bracha. If you washed in the morning with a bracha, you don't say a bracha when you wash again later, because we assume that your hands were really already clean. So if that's the case, we're really relying on a washing that was done way earlier, so we're allowing for like a significant hefsek. So the hafzik is not the biggest deal in the world, in between the washing and the birchas kohanim. But again, you're not supposed to talk to the chazan.
What about shaking someone's hand when they come over when you're walking?
So that probably you shouldn't do. That probably you shouldn't do.
Nancy, go ahead.
During Birchat Kohanim, the chazan called out several words.
Yes.
And there were sentences after those words. I always say those sentences, but nobody else does.
Right.
So what's
Yeah.
There.
So someone said, you know, they put it in really small letters, and if you read it carefully, it says, "Do not say these words." I don't think that's actually true, but this is a practice that did exist, but the most poskim suggest not to say those words during Bris Kohanim, because you should be listening to the Kohanim and receiving the bracha at that time.
Because they say it's an interruption, it's an interstitial between the words of the Torah that are being said.
It's a good question. That's a very good question.
Yeah, Dan, go ahead. Oh, sorry, Andy, go ahead.
What about a Kohen after he's dochening and he comes down after Kaddish? Can he put his shoes on? Can he touch his shoes? What's the deal with tying his shoes afterwards?
Right, so there is a practice that we have throughout the year that when we touch shoes, we ideally should wash our hands. I think we're very makel with that. Rabbi Rav Shechter Shlita is very makel with all these, you know, if you scratch your head, I see him go like that. He doesn't wash his hands right after. He said that was when people showered once every 3 months. So if you scratch your head, your hands were filthy. When you were walking your mud floors all day, so if you touch your shoes. So we rely on doing this or something like that. You know, I don't think it's such a big deal. I was once with Rav Shechter in the OU office, and someone asked if a Kohen could wear crazy socks. Because they're distracting.
Okay,
and you're not supposed to. Right? So I actually wrote about that in my sefer also, about the crazy socks. You're allowed to. Ramosh has a tshuva where he says you're allowed to. But, yeah. I mean, it shouldn't be inappropriately crazy. I'll say that. It shouldn't have, it shouldn't be inappropriate, right?
You got the socks, right?
Other question? Other question? Yeah, last question, I guess.
There's a minion in our community that did not have Kohen, they had 10 people. Two things, like, are they required, is there a chiyuv for them to, like, go and find the coin? And me being a coin, besides, like, me being a chesed, besides that, like, am I required if I did duchen already?
If you did duchen already, you are not required to. It is a very nice thing to do, but you're not required to. Are they required to look for a Kohen is probably dependent on that discussion as whether the Tzibur has an obligation to be misbarech. The Bir Halacha quotes that Sefer Charedim and says that they do have a mitzvah to be misbarech, and he just says, and all the poskim quote it. And he doesn't quote that anyone really argues. So even though people do argue, and clearly Rishonim argue, it seems that the Tzibur should make an effort to try to have a Birchas Kohanim, even though you're not required to do it. So it seems that the Tzibur should try to make some sort of effort.
Just to conclude, you have your last question?
I do have one quick question, but you've sort of talked about it, but I'm still confused.
Okay.
The Ribono Shel Olam, Chalam Chalam, are you really supposed to say it, or are you supposed to sort of listen to the Kohanim unless you need to say it?
So no, when the Kohanim are singing and they're just chanting a tune, that's when you say it.
But there's usually not enough time to say it.
So you could split it up. That's what I say. You could split it up. And that's, yeah, that would work as well.
Jeff, you wanted to ask a question?
The bracha, the paragraph that Kohanim say after Birchas Kohanim, we want to show all that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm the only person, but my midhag was to finish that bracha. That paragraph, the same exact time, Sim Shalom is in
there. Yeah.
That's
mine, not
too, because he told me that.
Yeah. I think it says in Shulchan Aruch like that. I think it says in Shulchan Aruch like that. I think you're supposed to.
What's, just to finish it up, what's your psak? We're taking your psak here. Kohanim, listen up. What's your psak on, not sak, what's your psak on the last singing part with the Shalom? Because you do have the bigger, you alluded to, you have the smaller paragraph, then you have the bigger paragraph. Do you add that extra half stanza into the singing? Do you do da ya ya? Do you do it again to allow the kehila to say the rest? What are they doing, basically? Knesset of Woodmere?
I think it's proper to give. The whole idea of Birchas Kohanim is ba'ahava. It's supposed to be done with love. And if you know that people want to say a tefillah, and they want to have time to say it, and they don't want to feel pressured to finish it, so give them the opportunity to say it. You don't lose anything by singing an extra, you know, 20 seconds or whatever. Is that the right answer?
That's the right answer.
That's the right answer. Okay. Let me just close with this. I had an experience over Yontif. I had an experience, and it's really along the same theme. Before Yontif, you know, you have a very, very caring and loving and amazing rabbi. I am not a very caring and loving and amazing rabbi, and there are often situations in my shul and people's families that I'm not even aware of as much as I should be, and I should be involved much more than I am. So what I'll often do is, before Yom Noraim, I'll send out an email to the shul that, please, you know, email me privately. I want to be able to daven for you. I want to be able to daven for your family. I want our shlich tzibur to have you in mind, to have your family in mind. Please send us your name to daven for, and we make a laminated list, and we give it to the shlich tzibur, to the balmos of the bal shachris, the bal tokeya, and I often again, it's probably because I'm not doing my job, but I'll often discover many, many tzaros in the community that I was unaware of. If not directly to community members, then family members of community members. And on Yontif, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, one of the Kohanim in my shul, a Kohen Miyuchas, someone who has like unquestionable Yichus in his kahuna, like a really, really, you would all recognize his last name. And he came over to me and he said, would you mind giving the Kohanim that list? Meaning, we're the vehicles for this great bracha. We're feeling this overwhelming sense of love for the tzibur. I would like to have kavana for all of these people. Then, when I'm saying v'yasim l'cha shalom, I want people to have shalom bayis. I want them to have shalom from that which torments them, whether it be the difficulties in parnasa, whether it be difficulties with health, whether it be, you know, with tsar gidul banim, with all those things. I want to feel that sense, and I was so moved that a kohen was asking that, because it was coming from a place of, it really matters to me. Like, when I say that I'm blessing the Jewish people ba'ahava, I'm doing it with a full heart, and I want to do the as full a heart as I possibly can. And ultimately, the greatest blessing is if every Kohen felt that way, and every Yisrael and Levi received it that way. That we should feel that sense of ahava, mutual ahava for each other, and for all of Klal Yisrael, and God willing, when we reach that lofty goal, we'll be ready to have a year of only blessing. And I normally don't end speeches like this, but the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, the Meherev Yameinu.